Salon 5. Geld, Macht und Leben.
Hola, mein Name ist Mirjam und wir hatten die Ehre, mit der im Exil lebenden Journalistin Fatima Karimova zu sprechen. Einmal ganz kurz vorab, das komplette Gespräch fand auf Englisch statt, aber ansonsten war es ein super, super interessantes Interview. Deswegen lohnt sich auf jeden Fall reinhören und ganz, ganz viel Spaß mit der Folge.
Salon 5. Die Jugendredaktion von Korrektiv.
Yes, right now we're going to talk about your life as an exile journalist and take a deeper look on how the situation in Azerbaijan is looking right now regarding freedom of press. And I'm very pleased to meet you and greet you, Fatima. You are an Azerbaijani journalist and the co-founder of Microscope Media. Microscope Media was founded in 2018 in a refugee camp, and Microscope Media provides information about the issues in Azerbaijan, for example, and is currently based in Berlin. Yeah. That's right, yeah. And your cross-border investigations are, for example, published by OCCRP, which is a project for organized crime and corruption reporting project, as well as WISE, focusing on the people behind the stories. And you have lived in exile for over 8 years now, and you continue your journalistic work in Berlin. Yeah. So thank you that you're here today.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about the freedom of the press in Azerbaijan. So as Paula said earlier, the freedom of press in Azerbaijan is heavily restricted, and it's always been a main topic in Azerbaijan, main issue in Azerbaijan, and has become even more restricted since 2023. We come to that back later, and many journalists have been detained or banned from leaving the country, but some journalists managed to flee abroad and now live in exile or work in exile as well. So right now there are no independent media outlet that operate freely inside the country, and with independent I mean like there's no government that controls what the media is publishing, so the access to like objective and reliable information in Azerbaijan is very limited for most of the population, and that is obviously a big problem. That's why the ranking of Azerbaijan is like that bad in the freedom of press. And I've already mentioned that the restriction of the press was even more stricter since 2023, which is linked to the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, if I pronounce it right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Nagorno-Karabakh region, you can put on the next slide if you want. Yeah. The Nagorno-Karabakh region is a region between Azerbaijan and Armenia, and it used to be inhabited by mostly ethnic Armenians, and there was always like a conflict between these two countries who has power over this region, and it was like an ongoing conflict for many decades. But in 2020, Azerbaijan regained control over this region, and there was like a military operation in 2023, and almost all ethnic Armenians fled to Armenia, and now the region is under full control of the Azerbaijani government. And but the humanitarian situation and like the prospects for remaining peace is right now really uncertain. And why it's linked to the freedom of the press is because the government like has full control over how people tell the story about the conflict, and have fully controlled the narrative. So right now you have like a good overview over the situation and Azerbaijan, if you can put it on the next slide. Now we come to the part where we're going to talk about your life, and the audience here and also in the chat can ask you questions. If not, I have also some questions. But right now, if there's anything, Dilara can organize it and read it out, or you can speak freely. So my first question is, Fatima, you are born and raised in Azerbaijan. How did you experience the media presence and the work of journalists in Azerbaijan when you like grew up as in your youth?
Thank you so much for the invitation and introduction about Azerbaijan and the conflict and my background. I was born in 1990, so it's a time that I had managed to see the when papers were published in Azerbaijan, which is now almost there is no newspapers, and the period before the internet, before the online media outlets, and even I managed to see, unlike this the new generation, I managed to see the president's term of the Ilham Aliyev's father. So he inherited the presidency from his father. Firstly, Heydar Aliyev in 1993 became a president, and in 2003, so Ilham Aliyev became a president. So what I have observed within these years that every year, in every term, it's just going to worse and worse and worse, so mm-hmm. decreased. So when Paula was talking about the freedom of press, so she mentioned about the basic law from German law. And what I found interesting, in our constitution also on paper, mm-hmm. we also have the same similar sentence. Even mm-hmm. it's published on the press cards of the journalists in Azerbaijan. But what happens in reality and how it changed to worse direction year by year, that there is no, even though there is no official censorship, but they just if they arrest you, so they do not need to censor what mm-hmm. what you have published. They don't need to check what you have published. So they just do not allow you to investigate some story or to criticize or to cover any protest or to cover any ordinary people's very social issues or complaints or other wrongdoings of the government. So for instance, when back 90s and early 2000s, when there were newspapers were being published, it was really completely different environment. So there were more criticism, there were more journalists, more newspapers, more public discourses, discussions in the society. It was completely different environment, but year by year everything has changed. So you can expect that if there is some a bit small, at least basic, so it should be grown up, it should be go better, but somehow it went wrong direction. It went really worse. And this crackdown that you also mentioned started in 2023. It's not first time that journalists are arrested in Azerbaijan. It's not first time that political activists, peace rights activists, labor rights activists were persecuted, detained, etc. So, but it's the largest one. So it's like literally the crackdown, so like a wave of the arrests that came in, and within 2 years, just 50 journalists around were detained. And before this crackdown, there were at least, I can say that three or four newsrooms. That they had a newsroom in the center of Baku, so they were publishing investigative stories, protests, and reportages, critical articles. But now, so there is no newsroom. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's even impossible to hire freelance journalists on the ground or staff member on the ground that who can provide you raw material or information from Azerbaijan. And what is the most dangerous part of this situation? So since we don't have anyone who can report from inside the country, we becoming more dependent what pro-governmental and the state-controlled media reports. So and they usually report any news or any updates that allow to them it's a law to them that to report them, or otherwise they cannot do it. It's if it's not allowed, or they usually publish or cover topics from the angles that based on the instructions that they got from the presidential administration. So it works this way because they need to keep under control everything. They need to be sure. I mean the government. They need to be sure that which topics are covered, which not covered, if this topic needs to be covered, which angle should be selected, so what could be the direction of the society. And in terms of to keep this control, they do not use only the media. So sure that the press, media is most important part, very strong tool for them. At the same time, they even have some special groups for NGOs, for influencers, for TV or channels, for online media outlets. So they based on that, they know that which topic should be sent, which one, and how it should be covered. So it always was like that, but not like this much. And sorry for a bit long answer, but in a nutshell, so every year it's going worse. And right now I even cannot imagine that what would mm-hmm. be a worse one. I hope it will stop or at some point, I hope it will change better way, but I cannot imagine, or and I don't want to see the worse one. Mm-hmm.
When you decided you wanted to work as a journalist, have you been aware of the difficulties that may occur? Or when was the first time you actually faced those difficulties as working as a journalist in Azerbaijan?
Yeah, actually, I studied my bachelor degree on journalism, and before university also I was really interested in politics. I was always following, together with my father we were discussing even candidates, and in the school also all my teachers, everybody knew that I was interested in politics, and when they learned that I became I just got my bachelor degree for the journalism, they said okay, so they didn't surprise. I mean, and also I was aware because even that time, so in Azerbaijan there is also some cultural differences as well. So in Azerbaijan the journalism work was not for women. Like as a woman you should choose some profession like doctor or teacher, that part of the day you can spend at home, part of the day you can spend for your family, your future husband, your future kids. So usually what offered to females, especially back then, I started my bachelor 2008, so now situation changed, it's not like that, but still the general culture of the society is different than Europe. So I knew about that. Also the working hours of journalists are completely different. So I remember that it has been several times that I had to wait for the finishing of some gatherings or some conferences, some political meetings until 10 p.m. 11 p.m. Which is sometimes it could be difficult, especially for women to go back to home at that time. I knew all of them, but I mean that besides all this possible political pressure, this is also the issue for especially female journalists in Azerbaijan. But since I really had the interest, and also I had the support from my family that they at least they didn't against that I by being a journalist, my work. So despite all of these challenges, so I wanted to continue.
So now you've been living in exile for around 8 years. When was the point in your journalistic career that you were like forced to leave the country and you knew that you cannot like continue working as a journalist in Azerbaijan?
Actually, when I was living in Azerbaijan and when I was working as a journalist in Azerbaijan, so the danger for me, so that it didn't start in Azerbaijan. So back there, so far I didn't have any danger. So I left first for the first time. I left Azerbaijan to study in Georgia. I decided to continue my study on master's degree in the Georgian Institute of Public Affairs. It's a university that actually after the events in Georgia, it's suspended. The universities, so currently it doesn't operate. So I got a scholarship from the U.S. Embassy to Baku, and based on this scholar, I went to Tbilisi. And when I was in when I was studying there, I started to collaborate with other media outlets. I saw exiled media outlets. But it's not working for as a staff member for them, but as a just freelancer, I was writing for them. And when we were in Georgia, we got married, my ex-partner. After our marriage, so by that time, I need to mention that by that time, so Georgia was a place, was a very safe place for all Azerbaijani journalists and activists that who have had a danger in Azerbaijan. When people have had a danger of arrest in Azerbaijan, usually they prefer to go to Georgia. Why? Because Georgia, as you have seen on the map, so it's a neighbor country. There is no time difference, almost the same culture, and you don't need a visa even for up to 1 year. You can stay in Georgia without applying a residence permit because it's just a, because of very close relationship between two countries. It's just a document between them that Azerbaijani citizens can stay in Georgia up to 1 year without any visa. And so since you can stay here with, at least 1 year, and if it expires, you can just go to Turkey or other country and back. And so it means that you don't need to apply to any asylum seeking process. That's why mostly everybody preferred to go to Georgia. So it happened dozens of times that some people just went to Georgia for a couple of months and waiting for some period that, okay, it's very dangerous and sensitive period. After several months, they went back to Azerbaijan and everything went well. But in 2017, so when it was just my master's first year finished, one of Azerbaijani journalists who was living in Tbilisi in exile, he was abducted in city center of Tbilisi and taken to Azerbaijan illegally. It was a special operation of the together of Azerbaijani and Georgian special forces, like not special forces, intelligence service, let's say. And after he was taken to Baku, he was he had this court process. He was sentenced to 6 years in prison, and while he was being interrogated by police, he was asked about some Azerbaijanis in Tbilisi about us as well, and he sent us a message through his lawyer that so people who are in Tbilisi, as special Azerbaijani activists and journalists, are in danger. You all should leave Tbilisi as soon as possible. So actually, our exile journey started from this point. So if this abduction didn't happen, so we wouldn't have any plan to be in exile. So we were planning to continue to live in Tbilisi, maybe in future, in several years later, to continue our study, we would go to Europe, but not as a asylum seeker. And so that's why firstly we went to Latvia, because it was the fastest, the first country that we managed to get a visa. And in Latvia, we applied for an asylum-seeking process. And so we left Tbilisi in 2017 late. It was November or December. And in 2018, when we were refugee camp, when we still didn't have any residence permit, when still our application was in process, so we didn't want to stop our work. So we decided that we should do something. So we decided to launch Microscope Media also because we as experienced journalists, we have observing some like gaps that we thought that we could fill them. So especially we wanted to provide some more explainer materials and more better visualize media products to the audience, because back then it was a huge gap in the media environment. So actually microscope media has had an impact on this regard, that in Azerbaijan environment, so media environment, it changed. So this exile journey started this way. Actually, with most of people, it happens like very suddenly. So almost no one never be prepared to be in exile. It's not no one's childhood dream to be exiled journalist or activist. So yeah, it always happens just suddenly. That you always need a bit more time, like time, not days or weeks, like years, to get used to this situation, this idea that okay, I cannot go back to my country. Somehow I have to get used to live in this country whenever that person is. So either in US or in a European Union country.
So now we've got like a great overview of your life and your studies in the Caucasus. Now we want to take a deeper look on microscope media and how you're working in exile as an exile journalist. So my first question is there any difference between like a normal media outlet and microscope media, and how do you get these information when there's like no media outlet operating freely inside the country?
I think the main difference of microscope media than other media outlets, as I mentioned, it's we always prefer to explain and to show more details, especially the hidden details or manipulated details of the news to the audience. Because in Azerbaijan, it's really common that these pro-governmental media outlets and the state-controlled media, so even while they are reporting something, they do not do it fully. Either they manipulate it or hidden some details, or they just copying and pasting the any press release of the governmental bodies or ministries. So they even never ask a question or give a more explanation about that. What is it? When you read some comments or discussions on even on the social media, you can understand that actually people has no idea what's going on. It's not only about understanding of some ministries' press release. It's also about the very major issues like a Karabakh conflict, like as political developments, the geopolitical policy of the government, and like everything. That's why we usually prefer to inform our audience as much as explained and as much as briefly and visualized, because it's also this time that especially in Azerbaijan audience, people do not prefer to read long articles, long boring texts. So they want to learn the information, they want to consume the information very quickly and not boring, so as much as attractive. So in this regard, our infographics actually very very useful for our audience to inform them, and it's one of the main differences of us. So it's like kind of our visit card that in Azerbaijan media environment, that everybody knows us because of the infographics, because of the very short and also detailed, also explained and also reliable information that even we have had some feedbacks from our audience that some people wrote to us and shared it us with that if they need to learn about something more, like if they need to explanation of something, they just take a look to at microscope, that maybe they explained, I can find more information and I can understand that what's matter, what is it. But how we work in exile, so it's currently it became more difficult, as I mentioned, because it became impossible to work someone from Azerbaijan, because we are not able to send their honorariums or salary payments legal way. And if you do it illegal way, so it's very clear danger for them. So for me, it's not actually, but for them, why I say the illegal, because according to the Azerbaijan legislation, the law on the NGO, it's forbidden to be funded by foreign organization. So that's why I mentioned that there is if you try to send this money, so you will put them in danger. So there is no way. Before it was different, but now it's completely changed the situation. And but anyway, we do our best. We always look for different formats, different angles, different possibilities that how we can continue to cover topics like fact-checking, like investigations, because for the investigation, that majority of that was done in the online research or sending some inquiries. So still it's possible to do these investigative stories. So sometimes they close some official, the state websites that you cannot open from outside, but still there are some technical solutions that you can do it. And also fact checks, still it's possible, and some monitorings that how state propaganda works, especially, for instance, recently Azerbaijan and Russia relationship, they had diplomatic tensions, and so we monitored that how just very quickly, very easily, the pro-governmental and the state-owned media outlets starting to support Ukraine in the war and started to criticize the Russia, but which before it was not possible for them to do it. And so we always monitored coverage of the different topics. Also, we have several times monitored how did pro-governmental media publish constantly the fake news or manipulated news, especially on Armenia, related to the conflict. And we share its results, and so in different formats like infographics, sometimes a text article or some video materials, and also small explainers we have done. For instance, recently we shared one small research and investigation about there is a special governmental body which operates under the presidential administration. It's called President's Administrative Work Office, and this office, it's a state-funded office, and this state-funded office owns several businesses like hotels, like newspapers, what else, the mineral water factory. So it's very different businesses, but there is no website of this office. There is no very any clear list of the businesses. How did they how were they businesses built? Who are the managers of them? What is the revenue? Where is the financial report, balance sheet? So how for where they spend this revenue? No information, no transparency. And we explained it that, so according to the even Azerbaijani law, it's not okay. So it comes from the state budget that these businesses were built, and the revenue of them are not clear. So who are the owners, who are the managers? So we try to always make people aware of that there are quite a lot of wrongdoings that you have to be careful, you have to take care of, and you have to think about. Sometimes it doesn't work well, especially if we do the same with the Karabakh conflict, because it's extremely sensitive topic in the country. So if you just literally don't say that, as Azerbaijani, we are right, we have to get back our lands back. So if you are not acting like a patriot, so you are just automatically became a traitor. You are automatically became a person who is funded by Armenia. Actually, the same happens in Armenia as well, because for both our societies, this conflict is completely sensitive. So both our societies are very similar, and both of them are not okay with the conflict. And as you mentioned, still also there is no peace. And the sides, the governments talk about the peace, but still it's not clear. So I think it also make the treaty alive between two nations.
So you said that many people in Azerbaijan recognized your work, and I assume that also Azerbaijani government recognized your work. How do they react to what you publish and what you find out? Do you feel safe working in Germany?
Actually, they use different ways. They send troll teams through Facebook, Instagram, and these trolls put the same comments, like copy-pasted comments, through the fake profiles, fake accounts, and technically it affects badly on the web pages, on not web pages, but social media page visibility. It's not good. So also, they once our website was hacked in 2023. So it happened 3 days before the military operation in Karabakh, Azerbaijan's, that the last 1 day of war, that Azerbaijan army took the control completely in the Karabakh. This war was in 19th of September, and our website was hacked in 16th of September, and we were edge almost to lost our entire backup, entire archive of the all materials. But fortunately, we managed to save it. Now it's safe. Now it's protected in safe hosting, and now it's good. But it was very stressful, very hard 2 weeks that that time that took for us to solve this issue completely. Also, we have had some threats and harassments and insults, especially during the war, because of our criticism. Also, slander media campaigns by the online media outlets, by NGOs that actually they are pro-governmental NGO, like non-governmental, actually governmental NGOs, let's say, that actually they are funded by the government. And when it also was during the war, also later when we were covering present elections, so it was last year, and last year also we didn't have any team member back in Baku in Azerbaijan, but there were online web cameras which were installed by the Central Election Commission to the polling stations, and these cameras are online only during the election day. So on the Central Elections official website, you can enter and you can just select the polling station, and you can just live as a, you can follow the what happens in the polling station. And even through these online cameras, we found some election violations, frauds, stop balloting. And when we posted it, so pro-governmental media outlets started another one slander campaign on us, that so it was a, like, they claimed that it's a provocation and it's actually fake. So the claim was that we have had some deal with that person who did the stop balloting. We called her and we said that, okay, we just started recording, you can start to stop balloting, like theater. So it's the pro-governmental media outlets claim that we did it. So it's not possible in Azerbaijan to observe a election violation or stop balloting. So they pretended that it's a theater of us. But what happened later, the Central Election Commission officially announced that these polling stations' results annulled. So the station that we revealed the violation. So criticizing the government or the policies of the government or governmental bodies is not easy, even if you are in abroad. So either online or different ways, like you always feel the pressure. So last year, when Ilham Aliyev was in Berlin, he had a meeting with Olaf Scholz, and they had a press conference, and I attended to this press conference, and in Azerbaijan, it's impossible to attend any event that Vera Ilham Aliyev attends. So you cannot go if you are not a pro-governmental media outlet journalist, if you are not on the special list. So even all pro-governmental media outlets journalists cannot attend. So from each media of the state-owned or pro-governmental, there are some certain selected people that they are allowed to attend to event Ilham Aliyev and to ask him a question, because they want to be sure that these people will follow the rules, will follow the all instructions. But in Berlin, in Germany, it's different. I just accredit, registered. So then that's why I became the first Azerbaijani journalist that asked him a question, the question that he didn't prepare himself. So I asked him a question about the non-transparency of the construction works in Karabakh. So it's also a sensitive topic for him. For him, it's important because almost each month he visits Karabakh. He said to me that he claimed that I invented that there is a non-transparency. So it's not possible. Everything is transparent. And he said that if you were able to visit Karabakh, you yourself would see that how nice works we have done here. Yeah, it's their reaction when you criticize, when you ask a question, either try to lie you, that or find a way to pressure on you that to stop you.
And for example, when you get, for example, threats or online comments, is there anything, for example, so you live in Germany right now and you're working in Germany, is there anything the German government does to protect exile journalists, for example, from threats, or if the situation gets worse, maybe get some other kind of protection and that they feel safe working in Germany?
As far as I know, I don't know if there is any special program to protect exile journalists, but there are some experience of other exile journalists that what they have done when they need a protection. So for instance, recently we have had experienced one weird situation that I it's not clear yet now, that's why I also don't know what happened, that people who presented themselves as a police, they asked about me and my journalist colleague that who is a co-founder of Microscope, but later we asked it to police, we learned that they are not police, so police say that we didn't have any operation, we didn't ask you. So we tried to figure it out that what happened, and so fortunately police investigates it. So they also try to find out that what is the reason for that, because we explain to them that we are exiled journalists and in our situation it's a bit more dangerous, a bit more serious. And also I'm a part of the transnational repression, the coalition against the transnational repression, with the different exiled journalists and activists from different countries, from China, from Iran, from Uyghur community. With them also we have had some meetings with the German governmental officials to advocate about the importance to fight against the transnational repression, because unfortunately in Germany also some similar cases happened. When I asked about that whether I feel myself completely safe in Germany, I cannot say yes, that I completely feel safe. And also I don't think that in the entire world there is a place that any exiled journalist or activist can feel themselves completely safe. Unfortunately, if they want to follow you, if they want to threat you or persecute you, they find a way somehow. But anyway, so all governments, especially I think that the European Union governments that who are always mentioning that they are supporter of the freedom of press, freedom of speech, and so they do. They could do more. They could do, for instance, law enforcement agencies could inform about special journalists or the people that who are in danger, that they could be protected more. I don't mean that during 24 hours, 7 days, follow them. No, but at least if there is any inquiry from them, if there is a request from them, so reply it more quickly, take it more serious. So there could be done more still in each country, not only in Germany.
So as my last question, is there any hope improving the situation of freedom of press in Azerbaijan? And are there prospects of you maybe returning to the South Caucasus in the future?
My possibility of return is only if the government changes, if the situation changes in Azerbaijan. That because in this situation currently, if I did it, I would be arrested. Or if there are hope, I hope that there is hope. I hope that there is still some possibility to change, because I always think about the Soviet Union, that during the Soviet Union also it was even worse situation, and people even thought that it's impossible that Soviet Union collapsed, but something changed. So it's a world, it's a history, so you cannot be sure, you cannot be always be pessimist that okay, it will never change. So still I have hope, I think that it will change. So that's why I think we, all of us who are who journalists that were not detained, they do their best to continue their other journalists work that who are in jail now, and continue to provide reliable and unbiased information, unbiased coverage to the Azerbaijani audience.
I was wondering, when you were studying both your bachelor degrees in Azerbaijan and your master degrees in Georgia, freedom of the press is also a topic in your studies, or how is that topic discussed? So, for example, here studying journalism, it's like a general or basic knowledge to discuss and learn about the freedom of the press. But I was wondering if it differs from maybe courses you have heard about in Europe. That I was wondering if there's a different perspective on freedom of the press. So maybe they are saying this is our version of the freedom of the press. So I was wondering what your like, maybe looking back at your study time, how did you experience it?
In Azerbaijan, when I was studying, the freedom of press is not a topic in the university. So I actually always complain about my bachelor study, because I always describe it like I wasted my 4 years. Because it was not a study, so mostly it was a Soviet influenced and Soviet style study about the journalism, very old trends, very old fashioned journalism formats, and even the books that we have had some books that it was acrylic alphabet, the alphabet that we have used in when Azerbaijan was a part of the Soviet Union, and not there was not a new books, not a young generation lecturers. What I learned as a journalist, mostly it happened with in the practice when I started to work, because I started to work as a freelancer when I was before graduation, before finish the university, and also some training, some workshops that I have attended later. But in Tbilisi, in Georgia, it was slightly different. It was more new tools, more new journalism abilities that and the knowledge that we have learned. For instance, as a part of our work, as a part of our actual study, our homework. So we went to the parliament elections and covered the elections. So so it was completely different. And in Europe, I have attended only like trainings and the workshop. I don't know what is the journalism study in university in Europe, but as at least with my study, with my bachelor degree, I know that it's not a journalism. I don't know how it's changed now. Maybe there are some new books. I have seen that some new younger lecturers in universities, but at least, but I guess that still the freedom of press is not a topic there. So still, unbiased journalism, criticism, or investigative storytelling is not a topic there. Probably technically it's changed. So they have a new kind of a newsrooms in the universities that better equipment for podcasts, for video shooting. But the topic, I don't think that it changed.
Thank you so much. I also have another question about press conferences in Azerbaijan. So I understood it right that every time there is a question asked, the politician or the president already knows the question and is prepared to answer it. Mm-hmm. Is there any way you can follow press conferences or media outlets that are press regulated from exile? So for example, you said that fact checking is an integral part of your work. So when I think about fact checking by a collective, there's a lot of monitoring and watching. Are there technical issues, or are you being prohibited, for example, legally to take place and online press conference, or is there a streaming of conferences, or is this all shut is it not free to access? Only in Azerbaijan you can attend or watch. How do you describe that?
There are some very rare press conferences that they are live streamed, but in the live stream you cannot ask some question or comment anything. You just can watch, but physically attending in these conferences, as I mentioned, there is a special list that verified by the presidential administration, and on this list, on those people are very well quite high experienced journalists, that they have spent at least 15 years in journalism. They are with a blue badge. They verified that they can attend to this conference, and still some questions were given to them. Actually, if the question were to Ilham Aliyev, so it was given to them that this question will be asked, and there is no possibility for other media outlets, especially the exiled media outlets, somehow register and attend to this conferences, because technically and legally it's required to have a registration in the media news agency. New media agency. It's a new governmental body that they established to regulate the media. And you have to register there, but to be able to register, you have to follow some rules, that you have to have a diploma, you have to live in Azerbaijan as a founder of the media, And every day you have to publish at least 20 exclusive articles on your media outlet, and you have to show the financial source of your media. And if you are funded by a foreign organization, you cannot be registered. And if you are not able to register, you will not given a press card. And if you don't have a press card, you even cannot go close to this building. So it's a bit kind of a vicious circle that you cannot find a way to get rid of. Even recently, when Ilham Aliyev visits foreign countries, so he take all his journalists with himself to each city, each country. So they ask these prepared questions to him, for instance, in Rome, in Berlin.
So, at the beginning, you said, if I understood it right, that in Azerbaijan there were similar rights for journalists as in Germany. And if you look at Germany, do you think the situation for journalists can get as worse as in Azerbaijan? What do you think, especially in the lights of actual politics and the society which is moving to the right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that the worst part of the democracy is that it's very fragile. You have to always be careful with it. You have to always take care of it, and you have to always follow and especially those groups like the right-wing group that very eager to destroy it. Like what we see, what happened in U.S., it's unbelievable. Yeah, we 2 years ago, four or five years ago, if someone said it to us, so we said that okay, you are crazy. We wouldn't believe that it could possible in U.S. But it could happen. So we cannot be sure that in Germany also these kind of things will never happen. So that's why it's firstly German journalists, German society, especially the German young people's. I don't want to say the duty, but at least they have a chance, they have a opportunity to protect it, to continue to enjoy living in a democratic country, to continue to enjoy criticize the government. It's really important that not feeling afraid after publishing an article, not facing or not reading some insults, some curse words from your people in your native language because of your article, because of your coverage, or it's not a very joyful moments when you open your website and see that just your website was hacked. So in German society, the situation is completely different than Azerbaijan, but it doesn't mean that it could never be like Azerbaijan. Okay, maybe cannot be completely the same with Azerbaijan, but in Germany also even the situation could be worse if everybody continue to think that okay, in Germany it's a democracy, it's not possible. It is possible, actually, unfortunately, but it's possible, I think.
So how's the topic of the press treated in the society or in conversations? Yes, for example, if you talk with someone about it, or is it generally not talked about in society? In Azerbaijan?
In society, it's not. I wouldn't say that it's just main topic. So about the crackdown, it's discussed, but not majority of them are ordinary, are simple people. So because most of them are under the influence, under the propaganda of the state-owned and pro-governmental media outlets, the number of them is extremely a lot. So at least around 20 TV channels and hundreds of the online media outlets that constantly publish the story about those detained journalists, that they actually they are traitors, they were against Azerbaijan state. So that's why most people I couldn't say that the most ordinary people are supporting them, but at the same time, so it's a topic of discussion, so that people know that journalists are detained, but it's discussed, but it has different angles that discuss. For instance, for some people, this discussion goes the direction that, okay, if this journalist who criticized the Aliyev arrested, so then I also shouldn't criticize. You know, the lesson that is taken could be a different. Or vice versa, some younger people want to be a journalist. But I think the main part is that this pro-governmental and state-owned media outlet really influence people. So unfortunately, number of independent media outlets, very, very few, that it's almost impossible to fight against, completely against all of their propaganda, manipulation and fake. And yeah, it's a bit hard.
Okay. There are no more questions. Do you have any questions?
So are there any points you wish for, like ministries of foreign affairs or like governments, international governments, like using pressure on the Azerbaijani government, or like supporting your work, or having any ideas, or like spreading awareness around the globe for the situation in Azerbaijan right now? Is there anything specific?
Yeah, sure. As I mentioned, it's not the first crackdown in Azerbaijan. Back in 2014 also, there was a crackdown on NGOs. And I remember that when it happened, most of the European Union governments, politicians, they were criticizing Azerbaijan. There were extremely huge pressure on the government, and some reports were published by European Union governmental bodies, but now it's very silent, completely silent. Very few individual European politicians are criticizing Azerbaijan, but since the number of them very few, no one hears them. No one takes care about them, and they are not in the government. For instance, it's not a minister of the any country that criticizes Azerbaijan. He's just a member of the parliament, that even his party is not in the power. So it always affects if there is a pressure on the government, especially the freedom of speech, especially on the imprisoned people. It always actually works. At least it has an impact on the government. But what happens recently, especially after the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, so since the European Union countries started to sign the contracts, deals to buy the natural gas from Azerbaijan, they became more silent, because they don't want to have a problem with Azerbaijan just because of several jailed journalists. So. But it should be different. It could, especially if European Union countries, governments, always mention that they are about the democratic values, about the human rights. So it should be followed.
Thank you again for taking.
Thank you so
time
much for questions and interest.
Answering the questions. If you want to know more about Salon 5, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok. And we wish you a lovely day. Bye.
Salon 5. Geld, Macht und Leben.